meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good afternoon and welcome to Winds of Change. I am Mary Helen Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C. And I am sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And I am joined for this hour by Gemma Kremers, who is the Executive Director of the Metro Achievement Center in downtown Chicago, kind of downtown Chicago, right, Gemma? Gemma, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mary. It's great to be here.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about Metro, that under Gemma's guidance serves urban youth, urban young girls in particular, helping them to transform their lives by inspiring them and guiding them along a path where their educational efforts pay off, where they are encouraged to and assisted in applying for colleges, and where they develop life skills like studying and time management. And beyond that, they develop ethical and moral skills that help them to be good people and good community members and good members of their family. So that's a big task, Gemma. Yeah. I know you're up for it, but boy, that's a mission statement.
Takes a village.
Yeah. Well, there you go. It takes a little more than that. Village and heaven and earth and everything else. But so, Gemma, before we jump into the work that you do, let's talk a little bit about you. So I think it's important for people to know, you know, because sometimes I'll interview someone like you who does this amazing work. And, you know, people who work in sort of a secular environment would say, wow, what motivates somebody to do something like that? You know, how do you get a job like that? You know, so that's what sometimes people will say to me. So, so Gemma, let's kind of start with you. So you are a member of Opus Dei, correct?
I am.
So
yes.
tell our listeners who may not be familiar with the work, as Opus Dei is sometimes called, what Opus Dei is and what someone who would be a member of Opus Dei would do.
Exactly. Oh, all of my favorite subjects here.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad
Metro,
we can hit them all.
Opus Dei, et cetera. So for me, one of the easiest definitions you might say of Opus Dei is basically an organization, a Catholic organization. So it's an institution within the Catholic Church that helps lay people of all ages, men, women, students, married, professionals, farm workers, from the rich to the poor to the most of us right in between,
right,
to integrate faith. And again, it's a Catholic institution, but faith is a universal virtue. So it helps anyone who would like to integrate their faith into their ordinary life.
Right. And to build up your sanctity through your work.
Exactly.
Correct?
Yeah. So it started in 1928 as a Catholic institution. It kind of moved along trying to meet the kind of the inspirations of the Holy Spirit that came through the founder of Opus Dei, Saint Jose Maria, who actually was canonized a saint in 2002.
Right.
And
so this began in Spain.
It began in Spain,
right,
because the priest chosen by God to start Opus Dei was a Spanish priest. But as soon as he could, which was the early 40s, he moved the organization and all its, you could call it headquarters, to Rome, so that it would be under the umbrella of the Holy See and very much be a universal or a international organization helping people no matter what country you're from, what your background is. And I think the main thing is that it resonates 100% with Vatican II's call, which is the universal call to holiness.
Right.
You know, like you said, sanctity. Each one of us, just by means of our baptism, is called to be close to God.
Yeah, and St. Jose Maria was really sort of prescient, wasn't he, in that he was given this inspiration directly by the Holy Spirit that your work is what can sanctify you. So I think for so many people, and this is what I find so attractive about Opus Dei and the people in it that I know, is that, you know, it's a frustration for people who think, gosh, because I'm not doing what Mother Teresa did, that means I could possibly never be a saint. I mean, really, people
it's
think
exactly
that. And
right.
They think,
yeah.
If unless I, you know, sell every single thing I have and I move to a ghetto and I pick people up off the street and sit with them till they're dying, I'm not really, you know, I'm really not going to be a saint like that. But
right.
That's not what the church teaches.
Right.
And
those kind of vocations are beautiful and,
oh, yeah.
and
that's
needed
not to discount
for the church.
Them. Oh,
as
absolutely.
You have done so much work to promote. And then that's just the beautiful thing. It's a hidden work. St. Jose Maria really never wanted Opus Dei itself to get the credit, which, you know, leads people to say, well, why haven't I heard of it? And it's because you probably know a lot more people connected to Opus Dei than you realize,
right.
Because it just moves family to family. It moves professional to professional. It is a beautiful task of helping people realize
right.
that really changing diapers, filing bank accounts,
vacuuming, driving in the carpool,
and being a surgeon under tremendous pressure is not an obstacle to being very close to God,
right.
And offering that work.
And
so,
that all of those things can become our prayers, right? So that's
right.
You know, the other part I think that's very appealing to people once they're introduced to it is that, you know, a mom who might be a stay-at-home mom and whose day really is the bulk of your day is trying to keep your home in order and to feed your family and to get your kids to school and to get them home from school and to get their homework done. I think sometimes I was talking to a mom yesterday in the grocery store after Mass, as a matter of fact, and she was saying, you know, her time in the morning from like 5 to 7 a.m., she said, you know, she goes on Facebook and she reads and she says her prayers. And but if, you know, the spirituality of Opus Dei tells us that even, for example, if I get in and I'm doing the carpool that morning, I can say, okay, I'm going to offer up this carpool
exactly.
time as a
yeah.
prayer for somebody else who might
right.
need it for something. So your
right.
daily work, you know, done well, can become your prayer.
Right.
So it's such a neat way to look at our day-to-day lives and to realize, like you mentioned, a surgeon, you know, someone who's going into a very long day of surgery or a doctor seeing patients or someone who works in a nursing home, all of these things can kind of be transformed into a day-long prayer. And that doesn't that come from the as I understand it, the example of the disciples, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So,
well, we kind of, people have said, or St. Jose Maria even said, it's a little bit like putting Martha and Mary together.
Right.
So busy about many things, and yet whether it's through spirit or through actually taking time. I mean, one of the things that Opus Dei is a huge proponent of is if you're going to pray all day, you definitely need to take some time each day that you only pray. So that is kind of like heating up the boiler, and then that radiates through the entire rest of your day. So,
okay. So you have, so each member, so could you just sort of explain that again? There may be people, I mean, even Catholic people who know the work a little bit might not be really familiar with like the different types of or levels of involvement in something like Opus Dei. So there are members, and then
sure.
there are priests, and then there are lay people who just sort of avail themselves of the spirituality but aren't technically members.
Right. So I preface what I'm going to say with the idea of Opus Dei being as much a family as
right.
it is an organization with the church, and perhaps even more. And so I think anyone out there who really doesn't know a lot about Opus Dei or hasn't, you know, heard of it, they kind of have to think of it as getting to know a family.
Okay.
It's not something that you're going to understand or grasp just by a few definitions.
Right.
And yet it's as easy as getting to know a family. It's
okay.
as easy as, you know, showing the activities that we have, which are mostly activities that help in kind of coaching someone in their interior life, a spiritual life, a life of prayer, as well as a huge facet of cultural and educational enrichment programs,
right.
because if we are going to bring the world to Christ, so to speak, and be holy in the middle of the world, we definitely need to be in the world. We need
right.
to, every Catholic Christian is as much a part of the public square as anyone else. And we all know what we're going through in this country of
sure.
just trying to push the
we
anything.
We never thought
having,
that would be questioned, right?
Exactly.
That our religious liberty and our able
inalienable
our ability to,
rights.
Right,
yeah,
right.
No, just pushed out. So Opus Dei, just together with its fellow Christian Catholics and, you know, you might say objective, truth-minded people are just working together to kind of bring this truth of an objective truth to
right.
the world, right?
Right, and through your daily life and through your daily work.
Right, right. So the members of Opus Dei are people who have met Opus Dei in, like, as many different ways as you have people in Opus Dei.
Right.
And they have, you know, through their own getting closer to God, discovered a call.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit like, I don't know, how did all the disciples end up following Jesus?
Right.
He might have looked at them and said, hey, follow me.
Right.
And at some point in their knowing Opus Dei, any member, no matter what kind of availability you have to help, you know, with the development of Opus Dei wherever
mm-hmm.
you are,
mm-hmm.
Feels that call. It's the
right.
same call, whether you're married, whether you're single, whether you're a priest, whether you're, you know, whatever different kinds you could
right.
have around there. It's the exact same call. What
right.
what differs, Mary, is the availability.
Okay.
So someone who's married is, of course, their way to holiness is their spouse.
Right.
You're a woman, your husband.
Right.
Husband, your wife, and then your task is to bring your children up to so-called succeed in the same way of their path to happiness.
Right,
you know?
Right. So make sure you're educating your children, you're forming them well. And,
right.
you know, what one thing I really like about many of the women I've met in Opus Dei, and I say this as someone who, let's just put it, I'm organizationally challenged in many things. I'm just... You know, that's something either God gives you when you're born
yes.
or he does not give you.
And absolutely
he did
true.
Not, he gave me many gifts. This isn't one of them.
Don't worry. It's not the sign of holiness.
But they, no, and I'm so happy for that because I'd be in big trouble if it weren't. But that many of the women in Opus Dei talk about, and the men too, but I'm friends with more of the women, about making sure that your surroundings are sort of orderly and pleasant to be in and welcoming and not extravagant, but someone explained it to me like, no, you want your home to be a place that people want to come into and that it's pleasant and that you know, you might get some flowers and put them on the table as an act of service to your
true.
Family,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So that you want that. And, you know, I don't know of any other Catholic organization that really gets that down sort of into the nitty-gritty in people's family lives where
mm-hmm.
you're saying, no, you know, try to have, you know, a clean tablecloth on. You know, that really does elevate your family, and
mm-hmm.
therefore it makes it a more peaceful, loving place. Your kids should want to come home from college on the weekends, or they should want
Absolutely.
To, because you make your home such
right.
a welcoming place. Can you talk a little bit
right.
about that and how that,
sure. Sure.
Particularly, Gemma, how it impacts the way you have Metro structured, so your
right.
your achievement center for young girls.
Right. Well, that's a really great segue. The spiritualization of the material or the materialization of the spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously, those are two really important words. The material world is good. It was given to us by God.
Right.
And I think we all look for a sense of harmony. I mean, there's something wrong if we're if we're happy in a completely disparate sense of lack of order, you know,
right,
we love that. We
right.
we go into a restaurant and we don't want to see dirty tables. We don't
right,
want
to
use
not.
The restroom and walk right out again, right? So just on a very human basic level, our being is attracted by cleanliness. I think it's St. Thomas Aquinas who said order is what leads to harmony, to peace of soul.
Right.
So really, St. Jose Maria, would hit the crux of the holiness of the person in the middle of the world is taking care of the things that God has given us, whether it's, you know, one spoon, a roof over our head, and a dirt floor.
Mm-hmm.
His teaching was, you know, take care of that dirt floor.
Right. Make it the nicest dirt floor
make
you
it
can make it.
Make it the nicest
right.
dirt floor in the neighborhood,
right.
you know?
Right.
And
yeah, and then we can, you know, from there, God may or may not give us more, but at least we have a place that's a place of welcome and a place of, you know, relaxation, right? And comfort for us. So Gemma, let's hold that thought. When we come back from our break, we're going to continue to discuss Metro Achievement Center for Girls, a little bit about the spirituality of Opus Dei and how people who are listening to us might be able to help Metro. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule? Work? Or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the Sacrament of Reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony on Winds of Change here on AM 750 WNDZ. And I am joined this afternoon by Gemma Kremers, who is the executive director of the Metro Achievement Center for Girls, which is located in Chicago's Greektown neighborhood, so kind of the South Loop for those of you who are Chicago people listening. And so we've been talking a little bit about Opus Dei, of which Gemma is a member. Gemma, how did you meet Opus Dei?
My parents.
Oh, so your parents were your parents members?
No, my parents were
just
good
involved.
Friends.
Okay.
Often called cooperators.
Okay.
Just as often called friends or people, like you said before, who
right.
attend. But they, from the time I was born, a little bit after that, my dad ran into Opus Dei through a brother of his who met it through his profession.
Okay.
And he started attending the Things for Men in Chicago. I grew up outside of Chicago in Glenview. And as a middle schooler, I started attending the leadership programs they run during the summer, which really are a blast
okay.
in every way, and also a means through which I learned as a young person to integrate my faith into my friendships, especially my friendships,
mm-hmm.
Kind of my teenage angst,
right.
my, you know, love affairs,
all of
boy
those
craziness, all
right.
of that. But as I went through high school and began to get more involved in the leadership programs, by the time I was a senior, I began to feel that call and just know that, oh dear, this could be something God wants me as mm-hmm. someone who can give my whole life.
I
always planned to get married. I only had one sister, and I planned to make up for that by having 10 to 12 kids.
Oh, I see. Right.
So, yeah, just felt the call, went off to college, really solidified that call and kind of made a permanent commitment with Opus Dei, which is basically just that. You know, you give your word.
Right.
Somewhere around
23. So it's not like a vow or something like that.
No.
So unlike like a nun or a priest who might take vows.
Exactly.
And religious community, people in Opus Dei, members, like numeraries, like you, I think is the word, right?
Right.
Make promises.
Right. Well, just that commitment, kind of the same that someone might make in marriage to their spouse, mm-hmm. although it's not sacramentalized.
Correct.
But we know that that's just a commitment that two people make with each other before God.
Is it a permanent commitment or do you renew it?
As a numerator member and also the associates who are members that live apostolic celibacy wherever they are right. in their profession. Numeries are asked to kind of give up that being out there in the world, living the call, mm-hmm. kind of the way that you might think it was meant in the early times.
Right.
You know, there were no houses of Opus Dei or centers.
Right.
But we all live apostolic celibacy, and for us, the main word is apostolic. We're
right.
not just celibate because, oh my gosh, I didn't want to get married, and maybe
right.
this is a nice alternative. But
right.
precisely giving that love and that dedication and that, you know, how do you call it, wholehearted imagination and initiative to
mm-hmm.
How do we get the message of love of God, of mercy of God, of, you know, the happiness that can come in the middle of a very frustrating world, in the middle of a very confused world.
Right.
And you know, really it is just helping people to get their eye on the ball.
Right. So you would live with other women who are also numerous.
And I do live with other women
right.
who are numerous,
so,
yeah. Professional women in the city of Chicago.
Right. And you all have this this commitment.
We all have the same commitment.
Right.
And we are about as different as,
sure.
you know, you can
as
imagine.
You can imagine,
but
right.
that sameness is in the commitment.
Okay.
And it's not without its ups and downs, as any calling in life is. There's tremendous support. And yet, at the end of the day, you're really eking out
yeah.
your own holiness
right.
the best way you know how, but with tremendous support from the sacraments, from friendship, from just the satisfaction that your professional work can give when you know it's for God and it's not about
right.
the success.
Right,
you know?
And it's about, right, and, so, and your work is your prayer.
Exactly.
And,
and most people, just to be clear, do work in whatever their profession is.
Right, so you know? Might be a nurse, you might be a doctor,
absolutely.
You might be a lawyer, but you
could
at the
be
end of the
a receptionist,
day,
you could be right. whatever it is. Right.
And at the end of the day, you come back to your Opus Dei center where you live
right.
and you have communal prayer and you have a kind of a communal life together.
Well, we have like a family life together. We don't do much communal prayer. It's
okay.
more like, you know, everybody's coming home for dinner. If you can make it home for family dinner, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we have the activities. That, you know, we have Bible study groups, or we have a recollection, or we have
right.
something called a circle, which is, you know, a wonderful practical class on how to take something like, let's say, cheerfulness. And how do you do that?
Right.
How do you really be cheerful?
Right, right, right. Okay.
So do our best
yeah.
and kind of keep our eye on the fact that parents, and this is where we can really talk about Metro,
right.
Need all the help they can get.
Yeah, and that's I think that's a really great gift that Opus Dei brings to the communities where it is present, is that from what I've observed, there are always these outward initiatives to help bring other people to a relationship with Christ, to help, and not just in a pious way, but also to help people improve your lives, which is why I wanted to mention that whole sort of idea of having like an orderly home and stuff, because that really does, first of all, I think that's sort of a gift and a skill a lot of people who might be middle class or certainly upper middle class take for granted, that you would walk in and you would have a nice organized home with perhaps some art on the walls and
right.
pretty dishes. And, you know, for many families, especially, you know, poor or working class families, that would simply be stuff they would see on TV or in a catalog. They would never imagine that for themselves.
Right.
And
Or, as you said, if it comes naturally. But for
right.
most of us, I include myself in the right. organizationally challenged group.
Right. Well, and it's a skill that you can that
absolutely.
Needs to be taught, right?
Absolutely.
Or observed. Or,
and a skill that needs to be appreciated.
Right.
So I think this is really what Opus Dei has. It's helped so much. And it does run a number of hospitality training centers in the country
right.
where people, you know, to really get that profession of service
mm-hmm.
up at the level of the profession of doctors and lawyers and
right.
all that.
Right.
Those people who work in our hotels, who work in our restaurants, who work in our in the hospitals, in
yes.
any service-oriented, like, take care of the material cleanliness.
Right.
St. Jose Maria used to talk about the importance of the work of the garbage collector, you know,
yeah.
like where would we be without
mm-hmm.
their work? And of course, many people do recognize this.
Right. But oftentimes those professions are looked down on.
They are.
But then, you know, on the other hand, you'll see, for example, the sort of explosion in popularity of something like HGTV, you know, home and garden television if you have cable. And,
right.
You know, these sort of, you know, what they call shelter magazines and the extraordinary amounts of money that interior decorators charge. And they do that because people want, I think ultimately everybody wants to have this kind of beautiful home. And I think that's why those television shows have made some of those things accessible to people who might not have access to them otherwise.
Exactly.
So let's talk about what you do as your apostolic work, your day-to-day work, is that you run something called the Metro Achievement Center. So tell our listeners what Metro is,
sure.
You know, when it was started, and then who it serves.
Okay, Mary. Well, Metro was started by a group of Catholic businessmen in 1965.
So
we have recently celebrated.
So 52 years ago.
Yes,
that's
absolutely
the year I was born. So this is how I knew. I don't do math that well in my head. That's how I know. I was going to try to impress you.
So 65. So what was happening? To get to your former point there, a few Catholic businessmen in the Chicago loop really saw the need growing during the 60s of young kids on the street, boys starting to get into gangs. I mean, we're so used to this now, but imagine the 60s having just come off of the 50s where everybody did kind of live the, you know, Andy Mayberry life. And they wondered what they could do with the skills they had and how they could prepare these young men to be able to meet the challenges that would be their Chicago in the future. So they were either supernumeraries or people in contact with Opus Dei.
So Opus Dei came to Chicago
in 1949.
Wow. So
yes.
This must have been.
Yes.
Was
so
it the
this
first,
was about 15 years later.
Was it the first place in the United States?
It was.
So Chicago was first.
Yes.
Very good. Okay. So 1949, Opus Dei came to Chicago.
Right. The men got started with a residence down on the south side, and the women started, I think, in 50.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's been a little bit going on. Not mm-hmm. too much. Opus Dei really isn't that
not what it was
flashy,
what it is now. Right, exactly. No, it's
but these businessmen really kind of they caught something from St. Jose Maria, who said, you know, look around right where you are. This is what he tells everyone everywhere, and see what you can do with the gifts you've been given to help the society in which you're moving and living and working. So fine, they started a weekly club for inner city urban youth. It probably started with about 10 kids.
And so this was all boys at this part?
It was all boys.
Okay.
And it was just, nobody really knew about it. It was this little club called Midtown, and they kind of, I think they kept growing. Again, put yourself back in the 60s, 70s. There isn't, we don't have this unisex, approach. We didn't in that time where everything that was happening for boys had to be happening for girls. I mean, again, you and I are kind of from the same time. And soccer, you know, you played volleyball. You played, you know, whatever the girls' sports
were, and I don't think
there
might have been maybe one, maybe two Catholic coeducational high schools.
Right.
There were not Catholic co-ed high schools. Everybody did. And that was just the cultural norm.
You
did things separately.
You started a boys' school, and nobody felt pushed to make that same group start a girls' school,
right? Yeah,
so
the girls didn't join the Boy Scouts back in those days, like we're discussing now, things like that.
So
it was okay to do things with other girls and, you know.
Wow, exactly. So 65 to 85, let's just fast forward.
Okay.
A great, you know, great group of young men, and that just kept growing, and it kept growing. And guess what? 1985, little fun fact, Reagan was reelected, and the inauguration was snowed out.
I didn't remember
that. Huge blizzard, and he looked out at the country and said, okay, all of this money that wasn't spent is going to go to faith-based community organizations that can write a proposal and convince me you're doing something good, and you'll get a piece of the pie.
Wow.
So Midtown, which is the boys' part of Metro, wrote the proposal. Mm-hmm. They got the grant, and it came with the caveat that they had to start a program for girls to get the money.
Wow.
Because, again, we're in the 80s now, and everything's becoming we got equal opportunity.
So they didn't write the proposal in that way. They wrote the proposal for
money for Midtown.
But the government said you got to do something for girls if you're going to take the money. Interesting.
Right.
See how God works.
Doesn't he? Isn't it great? So So that was the inauguration of something called the Midtown Educational Foundation, which is familiarly known to all of us as MEF.
Right.
And MEF has a website that reflects the fact that we are now a two-part organization, and it's midtown-metro.org.
Okay.
And so I'm just going to focus on the metro side,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, please. Right.
So from 1985 to 95, we struggled. I mean, I don't know who the wonderful women who got this started mm-hmm. were just sisters of guys involved in Midtown, whoever
right.
it was. We got some people, they got some people together, and they struggled to get the girls program off the ground,
mm-hmm.
which at that point wasn't turning any heads.
Why do you think that is? Because, you know, when I hear about Metro, when I first heard about it, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is fantastic. I wish my mom had known about this when I was in high school. Why do you think there was hesitancy to get girls to come? I mean, just speculating.
Absolutely. Figuring out the transportation issues, figuring out, you know, safety issues.
Okay. Were you still in Greektown at that point?
No.
No, okay.
We were actually trying to rent storefronts all over different areas of Chicago, trying to make this happen, right?
Right.
And so what happened is another miracle. In 95, a piece of property, actually, it's in the West Loop on Peoria Street between Van Buren and Jackson. So imagine, this is a rundown warehouse, and the visionaries on the MEF board at that time scooped it up, and everybody said, no, no girl will ever come to
right.
the West Loop. It's
right.
dangerous. It's
right.
this, it's that. You know, but they went ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 95, and here we are 27 years later, right?
My goodness, yeah. I was in high school, you know, then at St. Ignatius, which isn't very far.
Oh, wow.
So,
exactly.
You know, at that time, you know, you were considered kind of an urban pioneer if you were going to high school there, but a lot of families did it, and it
right.
was doable, and it's so
right.
close to the University of Illinois at Chicago.
Right. What's across and the street.
So, right, so there's enough day traffic, if you will, and it's not far from a big police station, right?
Yes,
and
yes.
Mercy Home for Boys and Girls. So there's enough there. And again, I've mentioned a couple times, it's right along the area where you have all the restaurants of Greektown. So there was enough there that I think that was a wise decision. And now it's completely gentrified, isn't it?
Completely. Well, we would have never been able to afford it, for one thing.
Yeah.
So they did get it. It's a not-for-profit building. And we're there doing Metro's mission. And, you know, just I think what you said about doing things well, we have probably about 200 volunteers who come through the doors every week.
My goodness.
Right? And so they say the same thing over and over.
Yeah.
Wow.
This is
a pleasure to work in.
Yeah.
There is something going on here.
Yeah.
This is, like, you could tell that people are happy here.
Right. It really transforms the people. Well, Gemma, when we come back from this next break, we'll continue the conversation about not only how you transform your volunteers, but also the young women who come to you for tutoring. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stas has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stas is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stas.
I'm Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ, and I have been joined this past hour by Gemma Kremers, who is the executive director of the Metro Achievement Center for Girls, which is located in Chicago's West Loop. And Gemma was just sort of setting the stage for us about Metro. She was mentioning that they have 200 volunteers who come. Is it every week, Gemma?
Every week
your volunteers come. And when they get to Metro, what do they do and who do they serve?
Great, Mary. First, I'd like to say, in deference to Bosses Day, National Bosses
yes.
Day, that I'm the assistant director.
Oh, see, I've staged a bloodless coup for you. I have. Who have I disrespected?
I cannot say enough about my boss.
And who would that be?
Aaron Aldred.
Oh, I'm sorry,
that's
Aaron.
That's fine.
Apologies for Mary.
We don't care about
Aaron,
titles.
If you're listening to this,
yes,
I'm really
right.
Oh, that's really good. Sorry, Aaron.
She'd much rather.
You want to switch with Gemma?
Yeah,
all right.
Exactly.
Okay.
Not.
Alrighty.
Great, Mary. So our
oh, assistant director, Gemma. Yes. Continue. assistant director.
Our fantastic volunteers. All right. We're 6 to 8 full-time staff members at any given moment. And
my goodness.
You can
oh.
imagine that having 200 volunteers without whom we could not run this program.
Sure.
Is the lifeblood of our existence.
Right.
So they, actually, we during the school year, the program runs Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday from 5 p.m. through 8 p.m. So the program
wow.
is 3 hours a night, and each of the 4 weeknights are dedicated to a different age group. So when you're a volunteer, you decide either which day of the week you'd like to come or which age group you'd like to be with. And we basically ask you for 2 hours
okay.
a week.
Okay.
So we ask for pretty much consistency. You know, everybody
things
goes
happen.
On. Yes,
right.
exactly.
Things happen.
But 2 hours a week.
Mostly you got to be there.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what they do and the young women that they serve really depends on the age group.
Okay. So what age do you start?
We start at 4th grade, and okay. basically on Mondays and Wednesdays, because we have a tremendous amount of students in 4th through 6th grade.
Okay.
They come both Mondays and Wednesdays. And the beauty of that program, we have about 125 students total in that program.
Okay.
Is that they each get their own tutor. So one
wow.
so
one-on-one tutoring.
Any given college student or young professional or even someone out there with more experience
mm-hmm.
Signs up. You know, it's a pretty easy process. You can follow it on the website. And really is appointed one of these young women, and it starts with order in her backpack and kind of teaching her what her assignment notebook is all about, and then going after whatever her particular issues are once a week for 2 hours.
Okay.
And it's beautiful. And then the next age group is 7th and 8th graders, that delightful time of middle school.
Yes.
And those students, when they come on Tuesdays, well, actually 7th on Tuesdays and 8th on Thursdays, they are in a small tutoring group of 2 to 3 students with a tutor.
Okay.
At the same time, they're appointed their own mentor.
Wow.
So they have that person who helps them with their homework, who, you know, gets them through the academic humps in their life. And then they have somebody who really helps them put the picture together of friends, of home, of, you know, am I the same person at school as I am with my friends, as I am with my family.
Okay.
And we know that, you know, this is urban youth. These are students. The students that we attract, that we are actually, our mission is directed towards, would be low-income families.
Okay.
Students who are average,
okay.
so we don't have IEP.
You don't do remedial, right.
Remedial
right.
help, but anyone who is willing to work and someone who is off the charts, perhaps academically, but wants that holistic approach to their life, you might say, or their parents want it for them.
Right.
But our target is the average student. I think this is very important to know, that they are usually the ones who in the academic world get lost in the middle.
Right. And so they're like the C and B students.
Exactly. And they could be the A and B students.
Okay.
They're just not motivated. They don't have the family support. They don't have an environmental support. They don't, they're moody, whatever.
Yeah. They don't know how to manage their time.
Exactly.
They don't know how to sit down and do a study plan.
Right. And that is our true success, that we have really enabled anyone who has worked with us in the program to bring their grades up, at least one letter grade. And where we see it is in the students who start in fourth through sixth grade, anywhere in there, and stay with us, seventh, eighth grade. 92% of the students who are with us in eighth grade get into a private school or a charter school or one of the magnet schools.
Wow. That's, how do you recruit the fourth through eighth graders who come to you?
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I don't think you actually mean that. I don't.
No, it is.
Okay.
Some of it is word of mouth. Obviously, I would say a healthy amount is word of mouth.
Okay. Yeah. Now
you know,
at this point,
we're going into 20 plus years, but a big part, and this is another aspect of our program, which is very dear to all our hearts, and that's called the Metro Summer Program.
Okay.
So to be very honest, Metro in 1985 started with the Metro Summer Program.
Gotcha.
And it wasn't long before we realized that in order to really make an impact, we had to offer something during the school year.
Right.
So all through the spring semester, starting in February, right through till May, we go to the surrounding schools. We visit as many schools as will have us.
Public schools and private
Absolutely.
Schools?
Okay. Parochial, public, private, anyone who will let us in the doors. Sometimes, you know how schools are. We're happy to work with anyone who wants to hear our message.
Okay.
Sometimes it's to come and address the parents. Other times it's a brochure drop-off. We've done the subway ads. We've done, you know, emails, things like that.
Okay.
So we only have a certain number of places given the size of our facility. So we do tend to fill our program. Wait lists don't happen too often. So I would say that's just because there are so many logistics involved.
Right.
But I do want to mention that one thing that's very attractive is we're one of the only programs in all of Chicago. I would say an education... educational supportive program that pulls students from all the different communities where they want to come from and helps them get along in the same program, the same building, the same
Mail kids from very different neighborhoods and very different ethnic and racial
backgrounds. Kids that really are seeing some terrible gang warfare and they get to know the girls from those neighborhoods that are so-called enemies of their own neighborhood. And so we do a lot. I mean, and these students, you know, some of them are coming from relatively calm neighborhoods. Others are really coming from neighborhoods where they have seen the deaths that we have, you know, spoken about so often in our city and in our discussions. And the girls have learned, and they get their brothers involved in Midtown, that, you know, this is someplace where they're respected for who they are. And that same respect that they want is something they learn to give to others, no matter what their background is.
So what's the percentage of the girls who come to you that you would say are from single parent households or divorced parents? So girls who are growing up in a family where the father's not physically present.
Right. Well, we were just trying to kind of get a more exact idea, but right now we're looking at somewhere between 60% and 75%. I mean, it's you know, you have mothers who are really looking for any help they can for their
because
daughters.
They're doing it by themselves,
exactly,
and they need that structure
exactly.
for them,
and they want and the role model,
right.
They want the effective.
So the mentor component is really what's most probably most important to them, maybe even more so than the academic tutoring.
Right. Well, and another, I don't know if this is the time, but...
If the spirit has moved you, it is the time.
It has, because we have been talking a lot about academics, and I want to be sure that we have time for the other components.
which are parents' individual attention, which I have been talking about in the mentoring, and the virtue development.
Okay.
In the form of character education.
Well, now we've talked about it being a Metro being sort of an activity or an apostolate, if you will, of Opus Dei, mm-hmm. right? So, but is the program itself specifically Catholic?
No,
it's
no.
Not, and yeah. So, tell me how does that work?
I mean, you know, people are always looking for labels, and
right.
actually, we're just non-denominational because
okay.
we're not a program of Opus Dei per se.
Okay,
it is absolutely true that Metro started under the inspiration of the message of Opus Dei.
Gotcha.
And
okay.
as it was growing, began to see that for those families that are Catholic, they're looking for also the faith component to be taught. They want their girls to have a chance to learn
okay.
more. And so we do have a chapel in both our facilities, the,
okay.
the boys and the girls. Beautiful chapel. Anyone's free to come see that anytime. And we asked, or the people who were in charge at that time on the Midtown board, they asked Opus Dei, hey, would you partner with us from the point of view of providing any type of... you know, service that the Catholic students may request. So it's
okay,
more
so,
of an
yeah,
opt-in
so the,
program.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's like a board made up of just
anybody,
lay people
yeah.
and workers, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So they founded this board, but then they asked Opus Dei to come and provide the spirituality.
Right.
Okay. Good.
Exactly.
That gives me a context. So when we come back, Gemma, we will get into some of that, what you have described to us as virtue formation, and perhaps even some religious formation that the families ask for it. When we return here, this is Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony on Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
There is a lot going on at St. Stan's. St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. There is Eucharistic adoration before the iconic monstrance, confessions 4 days per week, and masses in English, Polish, and Spanish. There's much more waiting for you here. St. Stan's is right off the Kennedy Expressway, just 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Find out more by going to ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org and enter into the presence of Christ.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony on Winds of Change here on AM 750 WNDZ. I have been joined for the last hour by Gemma Kremers, who is the assistant director of the Metro Achievement Center. I have mistakenly, Gemma had 30 minutes being the executive director, as I kept referring to her, for the first half of this show, but she has since corrected me. She is the assistant director of an incredibly influential and inspirational program called the Metro Achievement Center for Girls. It's located in Chicago's West Loop, and it serves girls from poor and working-class families in Chicago, grades 4 through 8, with both an after-school program and a summer program. And it helps them, Gemma's explained to us, with tutoring them in academics, providing them with mentors to sort of guide them through those difficult middle school years. But Gemma, we're starting to talk about sort of a spiritual and virtue formation part of the program, which I know is just as important to you as any of the academics. Tell us a little bit about how that works at Metro.
Gladly. So we call it our character education program.
Okay.
And we start with grade four, and it is the education in the world of virtues.
So what do you mean by that?
Exactly. So what are virtues? That's kind of the opening question we even ask the kids, and all of the adults, including myself, always go, wait, what's a virtue? So it's a good habit. So we are looking at every aspect of like a young person's life and inspiring them. Hopefully we have a lot of young teachers who get in there and teach them that habits, that virtues are good habits.
Okay.
So things
so
like
if you
making
have a habit
your bed.
Of, right. Always being late or
right.
something like that.
Punctuality.
Okay.
Exactly. And we do this by means of a character education class. So they'll have, they have their tutoring time, but they are there for 3 hours. So an hour and a half of that time is some academic enrichment, depending, again, on your age group.
Right.
And always, every week, a half an hour of character education.
Now, is that mandatory for everyone who comes?
Yes.
Okay.
So the character education, no choice. You're a human being. You need to, learn about
how to make your bed, being on time. Well, just things that help you, right, to be
Absolutely.
A success in the workplace.
Absolutely.
I was just reading something somewhere, and it was for high school juniors and seniors who are applying to colleges, saying the thing that will make you stand in this day and age, what makes you stand out, is if you do a handwritten thank you note. So something that would have been to the admissions director.
Like that. Yes.
Right, exactly. So kind of, there used to be, when I was a young girl growing up in middle school, like we had to take, there was a manners and etiquette class we all had to take that we rolled our eyes at. And
Aren't you glad you took it?
Well, my goodness, because now you see like the after effects of people kind of, I guess, looking down their noses at that, or just assuming everybody is being taught those sorts of things at home. And it doesn't mean they're bad people if they don't know them.
Right.
But for those who really want to advance in the business world in particular, you have to know those things.
Right.
And for, particularly from the working class and the poor, they may just not have the opportunities to be exposed to those sorts of things. So talk a little bit. So character education
is mandatory. So character education, a lot, as you can imagine, having to do with cell phone management, I would say.
Right.
We are a no cell phone environment.
Interesting.
So
why is that? Why did you come up with that?
We came up with that because we really know that what counts is the eye-to-eye
personal
interaction.
Okay.
Exactly. And that these girls, when they come, and every other place in their world, what do? They sit down to wait for anything, and they pull out their phone.
Right.
So they cannot pull out their phone once they walk through our pearly gates.
Okay.
And they have developed, conversational skills they never knew they had, and they have, learn to talk with adults and learn to look adults in the eye, because the adult will stand there and
look at them until they do,
and help them with true interest, which is what they don't experience, because we are a rush by everybody society, right?
Right.
I mean, I'm generalizing, but in Metro, we really aim at what Pope Francis has spoken about in different ways, something called a culture of encounter is our theme line for, starting last summer. We kind of picked up on that, and it's made such a huge difference. And it's made the whole no phone thing much easier and much more focused on why, not just that. Anyway, so a lot about helping them live and work on the virtues connected to relationships with other people.
Right.
So, yes, making your bed, order, all of that. But at the end of the day, kindness, charity, patience, So imagine 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th. By the time we have now started a high school program, so by the time they get to high school, they're like, they don't want to hear about virtues anymore, and rightly so. So we actually have what's called a leadership seminar for 9th and 10th graders, and then that moves into a philosophy of life seminar in junior and senior year, so that they are really looking at life issues, at ethics, at, everything connected to why. And that also has a very easy tagline.
Right.
Metro 4th through 12th grade, we say, to know the good, to want the good,
mm-hmm.
to do the good.
Oh, isn't that fantastic?
So yeah. it's fantastic, and yet it is, you know, so very challenging.
Yeah, so the high school program then, so you've told me quite a bit about the elementary school
right.
program and the virtue component of that. But so when does the high school program start, and when do those girls meet?
Right, so the ninth and 10th graders come on the same night as the 7th graders. So it's looked at as an entryway into their high school years, as 7th
okay.
grade is the entryway into middle school.
Right.
And then on Thursday night, we have the 8th graders with the junior and senior. So the focus really is the skills they need to do well at the next level of their life.
Okay.
So for 8th graders, a lot of skills building and discussion on how they need to perfect their academic approach and their character mm-hmm. education to really make it in the maze of the high school world.
Right.
And then for juniors and seniors also to understand what university life is all about, to really not limit their horizons to, oh, I could never go to college, to, no, there is education for you that fits your needs,
right.
whether it's community college, whether it's a four-year college.
Or a vocational school.
Vocational school,
yeah. Well,
you know, whichever it is. And so I think for the past 16 years now, we've had 100% graduation from high school rate, which in itself, we've had some girls really struggle with, you know, do they even make it because
wow.
of tragedies in their life through high school to graduate. And we've helped each one of them make sure
that
they
fantastic.
Graduate.
And yeah.
then 100% really having been accepted by a college.
Yeah.
We've recently begun to track all of our graduates. And to date, we have 91% that have actually graduated from college or are still in college. So,
you know, and I think, too, that this is where the spirituality of Opus Dei really must have an impact in that, you know, the vision that whatever work you're doing, if you're doing it well, it has dignity.
Yes.
And it can be, you know, your path to sanctity, and that you shouldn't look down on any job. You know, you talked about Jose Maria said about the garbage man.
Right.
I was recently reading an article in the Wall Street Journal by that Mike Rowe, you know, from
yes.
Dirty Jobs.
Yes.
And he was talking about how in probably, you know, the average age, I guess, of an electrician is like late 40s, and the average age of a plumber is about the same.
Wow.
And he was predicting that in about 20 years, electricians and plumbers will be making pretty much the same as heart surgeons because there will be so few of them. Because families that might have considered those as dignified, worthy professions for their young men and young women don't look down on them now. And they
right,
think everybody's
right,
got to be an accountant or everybody's got to be a lawyer.
Wow.
And those kinds of jobs, which pay very well, which allow you to support a family very comfortably, people don't want to do. So that we encourage any kind of work. If a person, particularly if a person has a natural aptitude for it, why
right.
wouldn't
yeah.
you,
yes,
you know,
yes.
encourage it? So I love that you don't necessarily say, you know, you've got to go to a four-year college to be considered a success. You know, a two-year community college program to become a nutritionist or a chef might be a better fit for you.
Right. And also just, you know, accompanying them on that journey through college, as I'm sure all of our listeners know, is such a maze for young people today. And I would say I've only been there 5 years. And in those 5 years, I have seen many girls, you know, start out and kind of crash burn and then come back to Metro. What do I do? And be helped to change to a different school.
Right.
Look at their other options. Look at their, you know, because sometimes you can't tell an 18-year-old, you know,
yeah.
I'm not sure that's going to be the right profession
that's
for you.
That could
you
be
know,
a good fit.
Even with among our midtown or Metro girls, so many are pressured by their families, by their schools. You should go into pre-med. You should, you know, do this, do that. And then no skills to make it in that.
Right. Right. But yeah, but they can't make a bed and they can't, you know.
Right.
Right. But no. And those things, because again, you know, you can't look down on any of those particular things because it's building up to being able to be a successful doctor. It's having,
and
for example, knowing how to do a study plan.
Right, right, right. And on the flip side, that's also been one of our pleasures is
mm-hmm.
to see students that you would have never thought would go to pre-med.
Right.
Really understanding that these human virtues that you need are going to be what get you there.
Right.
And so we, you know, we have students in that as well.
Yeah. Well,
I just want to read this
yeah,
one
please,
little.
Please.
I brought one quote from one of our seniors.
Oh,
And I just find it, I keep it, it's from 2014. I keep it on my file cabinet because it really reminds me during some tougher days why I work where I work. And it says, Metro hasn't changed my life. It has shaped it. It has made me into the woman I am today, a woman who is worthy of love, respect, admiration, education, and most importantly, worthy of a brighter future.
Oh, well, I can't think of a better way. What perfect timing as we hear the music. Gemma, if someone wants to volunteer at Metro, make a donation to Metro, or send a child or a young woman to Metro, where do they go?
Give us www.midtown-metro.org.
So that's www.midtown-metro.org. And this has been Mary Fiorito, joined by Gemma Kremers, the assistant director at the Metro Achievement Center for Girls, sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What things you say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? Marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now.